country in the world, Canada, is affected by Donald Trump and tariffs. There is not a country on the planet that has not been hit by tariffs from the current U.S. administration. However, there was a very telling comment from the U.S. ambassador to Canada on CTV News this week. And Paul, explain to the viewers right now the big picture, what he talked about and how different it is from maybe the narrative that we are receiving on a daily basis.
Yeah, Jim, what a social experiment this one is, right? So the conversation with a reporter, and I don't need to go into the details of the person, but anyways, U.S. ambassador gets on and they're grilling him, you know, back and forth about, you know, isn't Canada being penalized because, you know, we've given up the digital tax. We went out and got fentanyl. We spent $1.3 billion to shore up our borders, which, quite frankly, we needed to do anyways. So we spent $1.3 billion. We shored up our borders, but we're still getting penalized, right? That goes on to the end, and the U.S. ambassador, which he just threw a huge twist or wrench into it, he says, well, you know, you're only paying an effective tax of 5%. And that's the best rate of anyone in the world, right? Look at India that just got jacked up to 50%. Mm-hmm. And the reporter kind of rears back. He says, what do you mean? He says, well, your effective tax rate. So if you take out the USMCA, COSMA, which makes up 85%, and as you and I both know, those are mostly energy purchases. So gas.
Natural gas,
yeah,
oils, whatever.
You got it. Yeah. So that makes 85% of our trade. Mm-hmm. Zero tariffs, right? So now we're not paying anything. And then he says, well, you're only 15. And there's steel, aluminum, you know, and then there's soft lumber.
Correct.
So those are high, but they only make up 15%. And out of that 15% bundle, they only make up a small amount of that. So quite frankly, when you average all those in, zero at 85% and the high amount on the other two items, and then all the other 10, 15% items we put on, it averages out to 5%. So Stephen Murin, remember, I don't know if you remember this conversation, and you and I talked weeks and weeks ago when tariffs came.
Yeah.
So the economic, the head of economist for the U.S. government, you know, when you live in the U.S., and I lived just outside of Washington, it's really cool because they have 12 or 15 think tanks of people. So Stephen Murin was the head economist for the think tanks for the Republican government for years. And he's now taken the role of the head economist of the whole government. And he told us about these tariffs way back. And he predicted that for Canada, it would have a less than 1% effect on the end user. So when we're saying, oh, man, everything's going to go up, it's going to go crazy. Steve Murin told us that based on the USMCA COSMA agreement, based on all these tariffs coming, Canadians would see the end user Canadian, the customer, would see a very small amount, because by the time it got absorbed by the manufacturers, passed off between everyone before it gets to the end, we would not see the impact. And he's right. He's basically the conclusion. And, you know, we're running around. So there's an interesting part of this. Sorry, I'm going off.
No, please, go, Paul.
The interesting part to me is here we are, and this was a great, you know, the U.S. ambassador, the reporter system, well, we're in a trade war. He says, we're in a trade war. What trade war are we in? As Americans, we're not in a trade war. Are you in a trade war? Well, yeah, you know, he goes, no, we're not. We're in a discussion. You know, we don't tariff much of what we actually purchase from you. So quite frankly, you know, I don't think we're in a war. And quite frankly, you know, he went on to explain to him, we're not only in a war, but we're not interested in being in a war. And quite frankly, your negotiators are doing a very good job at keeping Canada at the lowest tariff rate of anywhere in the world. So then all of a sudden, we want to subsidize industries.
Right.
Yeah.
So Paul, I think, and I'm glad he brought up the job that the negotiators for the country are doing, but you can't separate what all the tariff talk is with the talk about the 51st state. And that scared a lot of Canadians, the thought of being swallowed up by America. And that has basically skewed our view of reality and perception of the terrorists. So when the U.S. ambassador, in a very calm, intellectual, eloquent way, explains what it is in real terms, and you go, oh, because up until then, it's been 51st state, tariffs, and he's going to crush Canada economically. That's all we've heard for months.
Yeah. No, no, I get it. But yeah, not well explained. I get it. And that's his style. You know,
it's unique.
It's a bad style point, right? I get it. I get it. But, you know, there's some interesting things that you need to kind of consider in there. And you know, in July, the RCMP came out and told us, we now have 4,000 gangs in country, right? When we went for this mass immigration push and everything else, we actually pulled everyone off investigations, criminal investigations, and we opened up the borders and we basically spent all our time just getting people in the country, right? So that's a challenge. He, you know, Trump, the U.S. government is well aware of what's going on here. We have some challenges in Canada. And I don't think we can't hide it. We have some defense challenges, right? You know, the Arctic is wide open. If you listen to Steve Bannon, those of you who get a chance, very interesting when he explains what the Arctic and what's going on up there and how that has a bigger global implication than we think. So therefore, when he's saying it, I get what he's saying. And I don't love what he's saying because he's saying in a really kind of demeaning way. And I think a lot of that came from Trudeau and, you know, the bumping between the two parties.
They did not get along.
No, they didn't. They didn't get along. And, you know, quite frankly, you know, all this stuff we're hearing now between Macron and Trudeau and all this stuff. Is Trump ever going to get along with that crew?
Never.
You know, no, no. He's
never.
He's not that type of man. And, you know, he's not going to put up with all the shenanigans that they're living. So, you know, there's no, to me, there's no surprise that they weren't going to get along, right? Because he probably knew what we are finding out now long before we did. So he's probably never had an affinity to be part of that crew. So, you know, that's only natural. But, you know, all that scuttlebutt about the Arctic and defense and everything leads to his thing, why we should be a one nation. I don't believe we should be one nation. I'm not promoting it, but I understand why he's doing it and why he's saying it.
And it goes back, this is going back years. I grew up in a military family, and I remember my father in the Air Force, the generals in the 1970s begging Justin's father, Pierre, that they need this piece of equipment and they need that piece of equipment. And we were in a peacetime era of our nation, and we went decades without buying necessary equipment. In the 1990s, it was discussed potentially about getting submarines that could operate under the Arctic ice. And now we may, if we're lucky, have submarines that can operate under the Arctic ice cap in the 2030s, if everything goes well, because of technology that won't be nuclear powered. And I mean, we're living next to the biggest, most well-funded, most powerful military in the world, who is carrying the weight for hundreds of countries around the world. So I mean, there's 20, 30 different things all converging at once. Decades of not spending on the military. That is coming back to bite us in the butt. Maybe being too complacent, thinking we'll always be friends. And sometimes, I mean, there was famous quotes with Richard Nixon, did not like Pierre Trudeau whatsoever, but they did business together.
Yeah. They don't have to like each other.
They don't have to like each other. But there was a poll done recently in the month of July. It said 59% of Canadians think they'll never trust Americans the same way again. And when I read that, it's not American people, it's American politicians. And that's something that will take a while to heal, Paul. So say in the next election, a Republican is not voted in again, and they Democrats get their act together, and it's a Democratic president who is really pro-Canada. I don't think we're going to jump into the deep end right away as a country after the pain of these last few years.
Yeah, maybe not. You know, I agree it does leaves impacts, it leaves scars.
Yes.
But okay, right? Put that aside for a minute. 5% terrorists, right? All the things we're being told, not absolutely true. So, you know, we're being told specific, you know, 50% here and that mm-hmm. there, but we're not really talking about the overall truth and how we're doing in comparison to other countries. So I want to put that. And I yep. think, I think you got to give, you know, I'll criticize, you know, me, I'll criticize anyone if I don't agree with them and I'll debate, but I have to give them some credit. They have left us with an effective tax rate of 5%. So say what you want about America, right? They have, right? You know, they, from a military perspective, I just want to hit on that. I did a show, another show with the Fraser Institute crew.
Great episode.
It was a great episode, and I enjoyed it very much with Charlotte and the crew. The U.S. spend $1 trillion on defense, right? We're spending 30.
Billion.
Billion.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, 1 million people, you know, we're trying to struggle with like 60, so 1,000. So, you know, we have and at the end of the day, what we found out in that interview is that most of our commitments that we made in NATO meetings recently don't hold much water. So, you know, Spain has already bailed on the whole 5% concept and has also made, so given where we're at right now and all those things, it does kind of ask the question, and that was the question that came up there. Can you criticize them for asking the question now, given the Arctic and everything going on? Are you guys able to put together your own defense, and are you able to sustain as a country? Because one of the things you have to do now is you have to get serious about doing those things. Now, you know, sometimes you can yell squirrel and a bunch of people run over and attack tariffs and go, you know, elbows up and all that good stuff. Yep. And they buy a hat, they give themselves names like, you know, this and that, and they try to become champions, right? That's great, right? Awesome stuff, right? Good PR. Where's the plan? Where's the plan that says, where is Canada going in its independence? Where is it going in soft lumber? Where is it going in metals? All the things that we're hearing every day now, that's fine, right? But, you know, I know, being a builder, I'm still going to Home Depot, or I'm going to Rona, or I'm going to my lumber yard.
Right.
Still paying, you know, $350 to $385 a 2x4, an 8-footer. I'm still seeing the U.S. paying a little more than that. So, like, where are we going on all these fronts? Like, what's the plan? And how much money, like, we always run to this, okay, they're tariff now. Let's go give them, you know, some type of subsidy. Let's give them $1.2 billion. Okay, great. Right? What are we giving them $1.2 billion for? Are we giving them $1.2 billion to keep people employed? Are we giving $1.2 billion to keep investors whole? Because right now it says we're giving $1.2 billion to soft lumber for loans and grants.
Mm-hmm.
Not employment, loans and grants. So I don't know what that means. I guess we're going to find more out. But I sure would like to, before we did that, figure out where they sat and could they sustain without.
I'm going to play devil's advocate. There's things about Mark Carney I like and I don't like. Mm-hmm. He's a well-educated, accomplished individual. No matter what you think about the man, you can't take away his resume. No. It's impressive. In defense of him and the Canadian government right now, things are happening so fast with an erratic U.S. president who seems to make things up every day on the go that I wonder how easy it is to plan. And I don't disagree with you, Paul. Mm-hmm. There should be a plan. But if there was at least a few weeks where the powers that be could get together and put together a comprehensive plan without something changing every day, it would help. I know the first minister's conference they had recently, there was some good out of that. Alberta, Saskatchewan, Ontario are gung-ho to build a pipeline to mm-hmm. the James Bay region and ship gas and oil to Europe. Great. That'd be great for the Canadian economy. But Manitoba hasn't signed on yet. So that's where, as a leader, as a prime minister, as a government, they have to get everyone on board and say, this is for the good of the country, and the tax revenue is not just going to, it's going to help Manitoba and everyone else. Because the faster they do something like that, the better it is for everyone.
Oh, yeah.
That's a plan.
Yeah, yeah. But isn't that part of being a great leader? You know, you say I'm very accomplished, and I agree, right? But your success is based on how many things you, as a government or as a leader in government is how many things you can coordinate and make happen and execute, right? And to me, that is really one of the key things that I think we're facing right now. We're spending all our time. You said, you know, how can I plan? Okay. The ambassador was very clear the other, you know, was very clear. He sat down and he said, listen, your effective tax is only 5%. We have a lot of issues coming up. Look at, you know, look at, he fed Tim Cook his lunch yesterday, right?
Yeah.
You know, and good for him. He got Apple to bow down to him and actually, you know, spend what, $3 billion more in the U.S., some crazy number. So, you know, he's busy making his country thrive. Now,
that's his job.
It's his job.
That's his job.
That his success will not be, whether Canada as well, his success will not be monitored or measured by how we do. So he's out there doing what he needs to do for the Republican Party in the United States of America government. So he's doing what he needs to do. So you got to remember that. He's out making all that happen. So, you know, that's the measure of success for him. And the ambassador said, I'll get back to Canada, or we'll get back to Canada when we've got the other things done, because you guys are okay. You got the lowest tariff rate. So that would, to me, if I'm a leader here, I would turn and I'd say to myself, okay, right, I get it. So, you know, I got 700 or whatever number of forest fires going in throughout Canada right now. I got smoke inundating other countries, right? The U.S., our neighbor.
Some of the worst air quality in the world.
Some of the worst air quality in the world. Hey, you know what? I have an opportunity to create a program that will employ thousands of men and women to go, you know, clear brush and get back to doing a program that we should have been doing before we made all those cuts and before all those crazy things, you know, that decimates acres and acres that will never regrow. And we can fix that. So let's take some of those people in the soft lumber industry and let's get them overworking. Let's make sure, help those companies transition over. That makes sense to me. That is a good program to fund and make happen. Just putting money out there and saying, okay, I'm now going to fund an industry, I'm not sure that works, right?
And Paul, if I'm Carney in the government, actually, I would be championing the fact that the U.S. ambassador said that. He said that our negotiators are doing a good job. He said that our effective tariff rate is 5%. That would calm a lot of Canadians down, maybe pull the intensity back for a lot of people saying, hey, look, we're doing our best. Mm-hmm. Listen to what the U.S. ambassador said. Effective rate is 5%. He said our negotiators are doing a great job, and let's plan in making it better. And maybe the future is some reliance in the U.S., some reliance in Europe, some reliance other places. And it's, I mean, I don't know any business that puts all their chips on the table and expect it always to hit 21 every hand. That's, I think that in the end, it could be a good thing for Canada to have a more diversified economic stream with money coming from different parts of the world.
If we stop yelling squirrel, or in our case, tariff, let's do this.
I agree.
Let's take the word tariff for 30 days. Let's take it out of our vocabulary and we don't use it anymore. I'll make a challenge out there. Let's remove the word for 30. Let's do 90 days so we can lease. And then that'll be interesting to see. So we're not going to talk about it anymore. So what we're going to do is we're going to actually start making plans how to survive, right? Affected industries.
Change the economy for the better. Diversify the economy.
Yeah.
Look what they did. They finally opened up that long-awaited liquid natural gas depot in BC, and now it's being shipped to Japan where they're desperate for it.
They are.
And those Pan-Pacific Asian countries had been crying to Canada for years.
8 years.
To get that liquid natural gas shipping to them. Now it's happening.
And we're 8 years late to the party, right?
But it's at least the benefits are starting to come.
Exactly. And we should accelerate that now because unfortunately, by being behind 8 years, we opened the doors for a lot of other countries who saw they saw it was a great revenue generator and they've jumped on it and now they're hustling it, right? So
I agree. Don't use the word. We won't use the T word for 30 days.
Yeah.
Let's hammer out a deal to get a pipeline from Alberta to James Bay. Use, as Doug Ford said, I'll give him credit, use Ontario Steel and use Quebec Aluminum and build a massive port, deep water port, and ship oil and gas to Europe.
What about a military plan that incorporates our production and manufacturing.
Well, you know how easy that could be? There is a company called Rochelle in Mississauga.
Yeah.
And they build state-of-the-art armored cars that our government has bought to ship to Ukraine. And they are saving lives. The chassis and the engine are built in Oakville on the basis of the Ford F-550 heavy-duty truck. Our Canadian military could easily use 1,000 of them and be distributed to Army units and Reserve units across the country, and they would take them with open arms.
Yeah, yeah. Well, remember, I don't know, you know, Desert Storm up in London, we used to do all the heavy armory tanks and in the locomotive division up in London, right? We are really good builders.
Very good.
And we are, but for some reason, right, we say, you know, we're now, let's dedicate some money to military.
We have plants in Canada.
So great. Let's go. You want to do submarines? You want to do boats? You want to do, you know, we got aircraft hangars that are sitting empty. Let's get out there, you know. And so let's redirect that steel and aluminum into businesses that we have to get going. But here's the problem, right? You can keep pointing at the other guy. You can keep saying squirrel or tariff in this case and pointing every time something happens to you. You know, how many more meetings do we need to have? How many more? Let's have another meeting of everyone. Let's do an emergency cabinet thing. Come on now, right?
What is one of the great effective things to do with a bully, Paul? Ignore them.
Yeah.
Ignore them and you do your own thing.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden they become irrelevant.
Yeah.
And then whatever Trump says, we're like, well, okay, we're good.
Yep.
We've worked our problems out. We're doing this, this, and this. We have money coming in from different economies in different parts of the world. We're building our revenue. Our employment's going down. We're building more. We're okay. That's fine.
Yeah.
And we don't have to use the T word, and it's less, you know, the squirrel reaction.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I don't think, and let's stop. Honestly, I get it. And I think the ambassador makes a good point, right? He just said, you know, making a big deal about buying fruit and making a big deal about traveling, you know, booing the anthem, all that stuff. It's a little silly given you're paying the lowest tariff. So if they... You know, we live beside them. I think at this point, we got to kind of, they are our neighbor, you know, for if you like it or don't like it, they are really our protection. You know, if anything ever did happen, you know, that's the only defense we do have at this juncture. And
probably they have been for the last 50 years, Paul.
Yeah. So, you know, you can criticize them all you want, but at the end of the day, they are what they are, right? So,
and I think we do need to separate American politicians in the White House and American people. I have friends and family in America. Oh, yeah. I've traveled extensively. I live there. Mm-hmm. My dad was in the military. We were posted there. There are some great people that would do anything. But you can't, I think as Canadians, we can't equate all 350 million Americans with the strange guy in the orange hair in the White House.
Oh, yeah. No. And that's, again, it's negotiating too, right? So we have 2026. We have the... COSMA, USMCA agreement coming up. Mm-hmm. All this is a little bit of that too, right? It's a bunch of pre-prep for negotiating an agreement. And there will be some pain felt in that. And we will see that. I think we all understand that. But by that time, if we're smart now, we actually park the tariff word, the squirrel.
I didn't think you were going to say it, but okay.
Park it on the side. Park it on the side, right? The T word. And park it on the side and get moving on some other plans. And then get, you know, and that makes sense. But I'd be truthful. I don't want to talk about, like, if every time a tariff comes and we say, we're going to prop up this industry, then I have a problem with that. Because that's not a plan. Throwing money, like, it's very easy to say, you know, I just met with the leaders and I'm going to loan them $1 billion. Okay, great. You know, the next question I have. Where's the $1 billion, you know, where's the $1 billion coming from? Last year, we're $60 billion in the hole in deficits. We're at $1 trillion in total debt. We have a crazy amount of interest we pay every day. We're a small country. So I think everyone knows that. We have a big landmass. We're the second biggest landmass in the world.
Yep.
We have a very small population. We have energy rich. We have great things. But quite frankly, we don't have the capabilities to throw around the B word anymore. So the B word was something we threw around during COVID. We got all used to it. You know, everyone said billion like it was, you know, they, They had a show on TV that was, you know, called Billions.
Yeah.
We all watched it. We all got really used to it. And then next thing you know, we're throwing billions, you know, we're giving money to this country, giving money to that country. Time out now, right? We got to kind of retract. We got to go back. We got to start looking at, you know, the day of interprovincial, intermunicipal transfers. You know, we're at $198 billion of provincial and municipal transfers right now. It's all got to end at some point, right?
The only good of all of this, Paul, to be honest with you, is it forced the country and the premiers and the provinces, it's been talked about for years, to tear down interprovincial trade barriers, yeah, to start thinking, making it easier for business in Ontario to do business in Alberta and vice versa, yeah, to actually be a country. For years, you couldn't even buy a bottle of wine from BC. That was illegal. Yeah. But it was totally legal to buy wine from California.
Yes.
So yeah, that did never made sense.
No.
So through all of this, if there's any good, Paul, it's bringing some common sense to the Canadian economy, the Canadian government, legislation, maybe cutting red tape, and maybe opening our eyes to things that we need to do better to make our country more insular and more protected against anything like this in the future.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. You know, and another show, another day,
yeah,
but we should actually talk about it. You know, in Obama, you know, it's kind of an Obama line, right? Like, we only need so many professions in certain areas. You know, there's certain things we need in this country and certain things we don't. We need more entrepreneurs. So what we need to actually open up loan capabilities for people to start businesses in sectors that are now deficient.
And isn't that better use of $1 billion than giving it to big companies already have it?
Well, it's interesting. So 20 years ago, President of China goes to Japan and he has a meeting with the Japanese. He says, what's causing you to be so successful? And he's jealous, right? And he's totally blown away by it, right? And he goes into a secret meeting. The Japanese, I don't know if you have any Japanese friends, but I've worked with them before. They're great. And, you know, during the day, they work really hard. And at night, they have fun. They party and everything.
Karaoke.
Yeah, and stuff. And usually get the truth out of them at the end, right? So because they're, you know, having fun. And so he goes out and he has a big night on the town with the president. And the secret of the success is they set up funding for small entrepreneurs throughout the country. And he went back to China and he set up small banks throughout the country that actually spearheaded a full redevelopment of the country and an economic boom that was never seen before. So, and you know, we as Canadians need to think about that. We need to start spending more time getting more people. You know, these young people we have now are, you know, they're brilliant. They know AI, they're very intelligent, right? We need to seed them to get going into industry so that, you know, and I think they'll be well fitted for it because they have the intelligence, you know, to run businesses, do accounting. They have high IT skills. They're going to be the people that help us develop this country. And that's what we should be focusing on now in this time, mm-hmm, when we're going to stop using the T word and we're going to start figuring out ways not to incentivize the same big industries that got caught in this kind of jam of depending on the U.S. It's great, you know, great. Sell your products to the U.S. I get it, right? I would do it too. You get U.S. dollars, right? The foreign exchange gain is amazing. You're selling it at the same price. Again, 2x4s, soft lumber into the U.S. Man, if I can sell all my lumber into the U.S. and sell it at the same price I'm selling it now.
You're making a profit.
Yeah. Yeah, right? I'm selling it in U.S. dollars, yeah, right? So I'm killing it. My foreign exchange gain is actually the same as my income tax liability.
You can't beat that, can you?
No, crepes, you're paying no tax. So you're really running a business at no tax because you're foreign exchange gain. So I'm loving that idea. And who wouldn't? I don't blame them, sir. But if that goes away.
But Paul, I love the concept of a government fund for young entrepreneurs. It brings the youth unemployment rate down. Mm-hmm. They create income, tax revenue, jobs. In the end, not only does it pay for itself, Canada benefits.
Sure, it benefits, right? So now I'm out of my basement, I'm working, I'm alive, I'm buying, I'm purchasing, right? Quite frankly, I become more attractive to the opposite spouse because now I have high income, I'm getting married, right? I'm having kids at some point. It's creating the economy. All the things that are, you know, lack of employment for youth and lack of employment for people coming out of school, right? Low birth rates, low marriage rates, all the things that are crippling our economy that we're trying to fill, quite frankly, with immigration programs that, quite frankly, are kind of struggling because of the way the world is now, right? So, you know, that's the challenge right now. We have to face it. And that's part of the you know, as the T word goes away, that's all the things you got to face to make it all work. And the more we say the T word, the less we focus on all those things.
The core things that could make a difference.
Yes.
Loans for young entrepreneurs, making sure we have a diversified economy, making sure we understand what is really happening in the business world of the country.
Yeah. The tough things.
Well, yeah. I mean, unfortunately, we're being forced to ask tough questions now, Paul, right?
Well, no. And can I say something?
Yes, please.
No. And before we finish, I just wanted to hit this, right? Please, right? And this is kind of a plea to the government right now, right? We don't need any more trips abroad, right? We don't need them. We don't need them. We need everyone to stay home, right? Like, first thing, let's figure out how to get the wildfires out, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, let's not go. I don't think we need to take, we don't need to have another meeting of all these groups of politicians. We need any things. Let's seriously put some elbow grease into getting the fires out, getting things out of control, right? And you know, because that's important. And then let's get rid of the T word, stay home, and start to work, roll up our sleeves and start to work on some programs to get it working again. Because, you know, flying around having meetings, you know, let's totally blunt. You can fly to any country in the world. Those countries right now, because of the U.S., the way Trump has acted and the way Trump is, he's had his own problems. He's, you know, trillions of dollars going in debt. He's struggling with his own economy to get it going. Forget him. The other countries have the same problem. You can try to go there and do a trade deal on something. More than likely, you're going to not be successful because, quite frankly, they're trying to figure out the same thing, right? They're nationalistic. They're going to try to figure out how to save their own economy. So let's get to the, you know, let's focus at home. Let's get these things going.
Yep.
We're a small country. We can do it.
We're a small country. We can do it. And we have done it.
Yes.
We've done it before when we had less people, less resources, less brain power.
Yeah.
We've proven it time and time again.
Yeah.
I just recently read Pierre Bourdieu's famous book, The Last Spike. 1880s, hand-built a railway across the country through the BC mountains, which is elbow grease and manpower, when everyone said it couldn't be done. Time and time again, Canada's done stuff like that.
It does. But for some reason, we got kind of over our skis, and we started thinking we were this big country. You know, we got into this kind of mindset of we're a huge country, and we have billions of dollars, and we can start helping out other countries, and we can start funding people, and you know, we got to go abroad and have these, you know, these big sessions, and that's not who we are. We fell out of the G7 a long time ago, right? We're a G30 or whatever. We're not even in that anymore. So,
yeah,
you know, let's come back home. Let's focus on domestic policy for a while. Let's get the domestic policy working. Let's get the economy moving at home. And then we can start to have conversations with others.
You know what? Paul, you're a smart man.
I don't know about that.
A pleasure, my friend. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim.